Welcome to Staples.
Hi, Staples guy. I need to get my kids ready for back to school.
Well, Staples has everything they need at low prices, like comp books for just 50 cents, so they'll be 110% ready.
Wait, that's 10% more ready than totally ready.
Yep.
That extra 10% evens it all out.
Sorry?
Well, I'm usually 10 minutes late getting them to school, so.
That doesn't even it out.
Yeah, sure it does.
Make low prices happen. Make 110% ready happen. Staples. Make more happen. Two pocket paper folders are just 15 cents each, all season long.
Offer valid in store only while supplies last. Limit 30 per customer. Ends 9/12/15.
Welcome to Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world online on our free mobile app and at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails, blessed trails.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel and patriotic music, and songs that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Our guest today is a very special friend of mine and a wonderful cowboy poet, and I can hardly wait for y'all to get to know him. But first, let's listen to one of his poems, If Horses Could Talk.
I looked out one day in the midst of the hay to find my remuda all gathered together. They formed a huddle around a rain puddle, and it looked like they were talking to each other. So out back I sneaked to take a closer peek and listen in on what they were saying. And as I drew near, I was shocked to hear that my old rope horse Joe was a-praying. They bowed their heads while Joe slowly said one of the most beautiful prayers I've ever heard. And as near as I can detect or closely recollect, this is how I remember it word for word. Dear Lord, we pray at the end of this day and give thanks for all we've been given. For pastures more green than we've ever seen, and just for this chance to be living. We're thankful indeed, each one of us steeds, for the time we spend grazing and playing. We're grateful, us all, for the gather in the fall, and for the time that Andy spends haying. Please watch over Buzz. He had to go because he liked to buck around the roping ring. You know, he wasn't a bad kid. He just enjoyed what he did. So we know he's better off in a rodeo string. We have good friends, and the joy seldom ends. But we've also been through times that were sad. When Pepper broke her leg, we didn't have to beg. Thank you for not letting her suffer too bad. And GW went too soon. He was gone by noon. That day he fell and broke his shoulder. And I'm sure that now he's with you somehow, and is better off as these days turn colder. Bless Bonnie and Clyde working side by side as they pull the wagons and the sleighs. They eat more than their share, but you know, we don't care. They work harder than we do on winter days. And bless the Nelsons too for all they do. And forgive Andy for when his temper flares. We know he means well when he starts to yell. Deep in our souls, we know he really cares. Now, I'm getting old and not quite so bold. And Pepsi and Gypsy are long in the tooth. And some days I believe that there'll be no reprieve. And I'm afraid of dying, to tell you the truth. So tonight we pray, give us one more day to do the job that we've been given. Bless us with strength to go the length and make this cowboy's life worth living. Well, quiet as a mouse, I sneak back to the house, deeply humbled by my geldings and mares. Then I made certain, as I drew the curtain, I hit my knees and said my evening prayer.
It's so sweet. I just love this guy. I have really been looking forward to having today's guest on our show. He is at the top of his game as an award-winning cowboy poet who performs and MCs all over the country. And along with his big brother, Jim, he is the DJ of a syndicated and award-winning weekly radio show, which he also balances with a day job, a very busy family, and raising horses. As impressive as juggling all that is, what really wraps this cowboy around your heart is his precious giving spirit and his own huge, loving servant heart. I know this is just about as cliche as it gets, but truly, to know this cowboy is to love him. Always there for a friend, always the first to help in any way he can, and always, always ready to make you feel cared for and to laugh. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome to the show Andy Nelson. Hey, Andy.
Oh, my goodness, Belinda. I tell you what, I don't think I can live up to all of that.
Oh. With the ways you have introduced me a few times, I bet you were afraid of what I was going to say.
You know, I was quite certain that there was something different coming today. Yeah.
Well, you know, in your honor, you know, Gary kicked off the show with that psychedelic, I don't know what that was at the beginning.
You know, yeah, that was a groovy 60s throwback there, man. That was awesome.
Oh, don't you know, Gary was just like cringing. Ah! I was trying to fix it really fast.
Yeah, well, he did a mighty fine job reining it in. He did.
He did. Well, yep. I'm just so glad to have you on the show. I know we're going to laugh a lot and we're going to be serious and everything in between. And so it's just going to be really, really fun. And although we've spent a ton of time together and we're very dear friends, we haven't really talked a lot about each other's backgrounds and childhoods and all of that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah. So isn't that interesting?
I know.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, because we're too busy laughing and being silly and goofy, I think, is probably what's going on.
Or talking business, right?
Or talking, a little bit of that in there somewhere, but mostly just
every
once in a while, we actually get serious. It's true.
Let's
start at the beginning. So tell me about your childhood. I would love to hear this.
Oh, you know, I was such a blessed child. You can't believe every person wishes they had the childhood I had. Raised by the most wonderful parents you could ever ask for. My father was the biggest cowboy character you'd ever met. And I tell you, if you think, if you knew my dad, you would know that I come by this honestly, Belinda.
Character part?
Oh, the character part. Absolutely. When I first introduced my wife to my father, she wasn't sure if he was serious or not, and he would be just telling her the biggest Wendy, and she would swallow the whole thing. Yeah. So my dad was wonderful. He was a cowboy and a farrier. And my mother was the most loving and hardest working woman I ever knew in my whole life to date. She went back to college while I was in kindergarten, and she became an emergency room nurse. And she worked nights in an emergency room for a lot of years, and she functioned on very little sleep because she wanted to be there when we went to school, and she made sure that she was up and everything was running by the time we got home from school. So she did not sleep much. And what a wonderful, wonderful lady. I have two brothers and three sisters, and you know one of my brothers, and you know he is just as demented as I am.
If not more.
Well, yeah. Okay, let's go there. Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna say he's more demented than I am. That's how that works for me.
You know, you kind of expect it coming from you, but boy, he gets you. He blindsides you a lot.
He sneaks right up on you with it.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about him later, but yeah, he's wonderful. I just love you guys both. So now you were raised, your dad was a cowboy, so you were raised ranching, it sounds like.
Yeah, so we were raised in southern Idaho, and by the time I came along, the family ranch was no more, but my dad was shoeing horses for a living. So big brother Jim and I grew up in his old International Harvester pickup, traveling the shoeing circuit. We covered a lot of miles over southern Idaho, northern Nevada, and northern Utah, making the horseshoeing circuit. So, yeah,
wow.
What a great way to grow up.
Oh, my goodness. Traveling and hanging with your dad and working. Were you guys actually shoeing, or were you gophers for your dad, or how did that work?
Yep, we were the chief gophers. We handed him tools. That's what we did. And then when we got older, then we were able to pritchle the nail holes and shape the shoes and things like that. And then as we continued to age, then he put a pair of nippers in our hands. And then that's how both of us became farriers. And both of us shod horses for a lot of years for a living. That's, of course, not what we do anymore. Most people can't afford to have their horses lame that long. So, yeah, I just about snuck that one past you, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, you don't talk a lot about it, but I know that you have a wonderful relationship with the Lord, and you are the first one to pray with people. And I always love to find out from my guests, because I know it was very profound for me point in my young life when the Lord went from God out there, you know, that was ready to like pounce on you when you did something wrong, to the Lord in my heart that was my best friend that I could talk to and take, you know, just be completely open and myself with, and you know, just that really personal, intimate relationship. And tell us about that. You know, how did that, was that an evolution? Was it epiphany? You know, what was that for you?
Yeah, you know, honestly, for me, that began with my mother. My mother was the one that introduced me and helped me strengthen my relationship with my Heavenly Father. And I tell you, because of her, I have that relationship, and I am so grateful. But there are other things that come to mind. You know how it is. Sometimes you have to really bottom out until you can become humble and teachable again. And that's when you really start getting on your knees and you start counseling with your father like you should. And like you said, as a father, not as this great deity that is ready to strike you down at any time. And I remember many, many times, one particular time, not knowing where I should head and what where my life should go and what I should be doing. And I remember being by myself with just a horse and a whole bunch of cow-calf pairs, and having a real conversation with my father in heaven at that time, alone in a grove of aspen trees.
Mm. Wow. I can. Oh, that's a beautiful picture. That's a poem, Andy. Yeah.
You know, it is, and I need to write that one. There are just so many blessings I have in my life, and they're all because of him.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. And all of this, every good thing, the Bible tells us that every good thing comes from our Heavenly Father. I mean, it comes from him. So it's wonderful when we can recognize and honor and glorify him about that. That's awesome. So you grew up in this wonderful, idyllic childhood with fabulous parents hauling around the country, farriering, if that's a word, with your dad.
Yeah, well, you can pronounce it however you like. It's no big deal.
And so then you went off to college, and you went off and you were pre-vet in college?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's an interesting story. I guess you've got I guess you got plenty of time, huh?
So we do, yeah. Just
okay. Well, let's talk about that. I went to college at Utah State, and when I got there, I got involved in the horsemanship program, and then I was working for a fellow there at the horse barn, and my major was pre-vet. And then he found out that I could shoe horses. So back then, minimum wage, I'm thinking, was like $2.75 an hour, something like mm-hmm. that. So I'm getting $2.75 an hour to work in this horse barn. Then he finds out I can shoe horses. So he starts putting me underneath horses. So I'm shoeing horses for $2.75 an hour. There's something wrong with this picture. All right. And I'm and at that point in time, I think I'm getting $20 or $25 a horse to shoe.
Right.
Yeah. And so finally, I approach him and I say, "Look, Pard, I can't continue to shoe your horses for you here for $2.75 an hour. It's just not working." And he pauses for a minute and he says, "Well, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. Every time you shoe a horse, put yourself down for 2 hours. How's that?" Yeah, so now I'm making $5.50 an hour, a horse or whatever, you know, for shoeing. And finally, we had to agree to disagree, and we had to part ways because I was shoeing horses for a very good bargain price for him. But how I changed my major was my wife at that time started experiencing some numbness in her hand, and she went to see a chiropractor. And I had never seen a chiropractor before in my life. I didn't know what they did. And I saw her healed, if you will, with the help of this chiropractor. And I thought, you know what? That's cool. So at the same time I applied to vet school for graduate, I applied for chiropractic school also. And once again, having a new wife and a brand new baby girl, Sadie was just born. I remember having a conversation with the Lord and saying, "The direction of which you point me, that's where I'm going." So what happened is I got a letter back from the vet school saying you are not accepted. And I got a letter back from the chiropractic school saying you are accepted. And I turned 180 degrees and we pointed our little car toward Iowa to go to chiropractic school.
Oh, I was wondering when I saw that in your bio, I'm like, okay, pre-vet to chiropractor. Yeah. This ought to be a good story.
Yeah. How did that work out? Yeah. What's really cool about it though, is I do a lot of equine chiropractic.
Oh, you know what? I want to go to a song right now, but when we come back from this song, I want to hear a little more about that because you were telling me about that in the green room at one of the gigs where we were, and I was fascinated with that, and I want to spend a little more time on that. So before we go there, what I would love for you to do is set up the poem Riding with Jim.
Oh my goodness, this is a dream that I am blessed to have every once in a while. It's not very often. And it was after I had one of these dreams that the Lord helped me write this poem.
Okay, and so we're going to just let the poem tell itself then.
Right.
Tell its own story. Okay, here we are with Riding with Jim.
Well, it's been years now, and I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to rewrite the end. I fret, and I ponder. Most often I wonder if I'll ever be as good a cowboy as my friend. See, friends come and go, as does every foe, but certain people touch your lives forever. Jim was a horseman, unlike most men, and a better farrier I've never seen ever. Well, he was old and grizzled, and his blood sizzled if I wasn't paying attention to his advice. He taught me all that he could recall about horses and shoeing at least twice, but I was young and awfully high-strung. I didn't have time to listen to his stories. I had to ride fast and not be the last to tout my own accomplishments and glories. Of course, I was never one to ever be outdone. I was so full of myself, cocky and young. I knew it all back then, but that was when my wits weren't near as sharp as my tongue. So I did my own thing, never really wondering what was missing in my life back then. And it wasn't till later my ego would crater and I'd become teachable again. My oats I kept sowing, not ever knowing that God had sent Jim to make me a better man. So he took him away, one cold spring day, and I was left alone to do the best that I can. Well, I never did think that he'd die on the brink of me becoming the cowboy that I should. But it was too late. I had sealed my own fate and would have to venture alone into manhood. Well, I knew that I couldn't break down and cry or let others see how deeply I was hurt. I felt ashamed, and myself I blamed for this old cowboy that lay cold in the dirt. Many times he tried before the day he died to teach me what he had learned from life's travails, but I didn't take time. See, my life was mine. What could I possibly learn from his stories and tales? Well, now I feel cheated, for the way that I treated riding with that old cowboy is a chore, and still I pray that somehow, some way, I could go riding with Jim just once more. And periodically I'm given that chance while still living to sit horseback once again with Jim. When I fall into a deep, almost comatose sleep, God allows a brief rendezvous with him. Now, I know it's just a dream, but to me it sure seems just as real as the first day we rode together. We don't ever talk. We just ride and walk, enjoying the Quakies, the sage, and each other. We ride up Fall Creek where the willows are real thick and the untouched water cascades down. A doe and a fawn bound effortlessly on, we're partnered up and we're miles from town. Then the sun peeks over and spots this old drover and illuminates his face from under his hat. And his peaceful look, like the cover of a book, shows his contentment for where he is at. See, he is astride Big Joe. And we all know that that big old steed was his favorite mount. With his rawhide hack and his slicker on back, we ride as cows and blessings we count. And as the dew burns off, I hear a cow cough, and Jim sets out for the top of a draw. I tag alongside, our horses in stride, and we gather that rogue without a flaw. We ride all day, gathering mavericks and strays. And I know any minute this is gonna end. So I hold on tight. This couldn't be more right. But the home corral is just around the bend. Now, I don't wanna wake. But as the new day breaks, the stock's waiting for me in the morning light. But first I thank God. And I give Jim a nod for that wonderful ride we took that night. Now, I know it don't sound much like a vision or such, but it helps till the next visit to be had. And I'm proud to say, in a boastful kind of way, that old cowboy was my mentor and my dad. You see, I took much for granted, but the seed he planted, and now I cherish each and every ride. My heart is still hurtin', but this I am certain, Jim and Big Joe are waiting on the other side.
Oh, that makes me choke up.
Yeah, it does me too.
Oh, my gosh. So how old were you when you lost your dad?
I was 28, so I had him for all of my formative years. And you know how it goes. You really don't appreciate them until they're not around anymore.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, you just feel like... I could have been a better, son, and there's not a day goes by that I don't wish I could pick up the phone and ask him a question or tell him about something I did or something like that. So it's just a wonderful comfort to know that I'll be able to see him again and talk with him again.
Yeah, and you can visit about all that stuff once you see him again.
Oh, my goodness. We are going to have so much catching up to do. I mean, it's going to take us a lot of long, a good part of eternity to get caught up on it. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's a beautiful tribute to your dad. So congratulations on that. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You're welcome.
Yep.
So let's talk about... chiropractic horses. When you told me that you worked on horses, I was like, how big of a table do you have to have for that?
Yeah. It's a little different environment than it is here at the office. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I like doing horses better than I do people. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that out loud, but I do. It's really a neat deal. So I have a little step ladder, and I put this little step ladder next to the horses. When they've never been adjusted before, they're a little leery about what you're doing because they'll equate a step ladder with you trying to get on them or something like that. But once you have their trust and you find the place that is ailing them, they almost talk to you, Belinda. I mean, they turn and they look at you, and you can tell by their eyes and their ears that hurts. That's a spot that is bothering me. And when you make that connection, it is absolutely amazing. It's like you're talking to each other. We do a little adjusting. Yeah, I get over the top of them. I do a little adjusting. And we move those vertebrae, and when we're finished, the horse is so appreciative. Their eyes go soft, they lick their lips, they chew, they look at you, and it's almost like they're saying, oh, yeah, that was it. That's what I've been trying to say all along. You know, that's why I've been snotty, or that's why I've been bucking, is because that hurts.
Yeah. But please, when you say you're doing it, I mean, how do you do an adjustment? I mean, how do you? It's a big old horse. I mean, do you like?
It is.
I know what happens with people, but physically, how do you do that?
You know, it's not as hard as you think it might be. You don't have to be a big, strong, muscular guy to do it. You have to know the orientation of the vertebra, how they sit in the spine, and the direction in which they move. It's called a line of correction. And I put one hand on top of the other in the direction I wish that vertebra to move. And basically all I'm doing is introducing motion into a vertebra that is not moving correctly. So it doesn't take an awful lot of oomph to get it done, and the horse cooperates like you wouldn't believe. You know, they're quadrupeds, so they're sitting in a position as if they were laying on a table. You know, they're standing as if I was working on someone laying on a table. And when I push on that vertebra, they sag a little bit, they give a little bit, and that's exactly what I'm looking for them to do. I don't want them to be rigid. I want them to give underneath a little bit of that pressure. Once they experience, it for the first time, they're so much smarter than people, Belinda. You know, they get it. They say, "Oh, yeah, that was great. I know what he's doing now. Yeah, I got it. I'm with you." Yeah. And then they don't go out and lift something they shouldn't, you know, and do something. Yeah. And do something that they shouldn't, like most humans do, unless a human intervenes and asks him to do something he shouldn't before it's time. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Well, when you said you were a chiropractor for horses, I had this vision of you like laying them down and, you know, giving them a, you know.
Yeah. That's a pretty good vision right there, actually.
Yeah.
Really. And horses they're very appreciative.
Yes. Yeah, one time you did share with me that you said it's like once you've done an adjustment on a horse, it's when you come back again, they're like, "Oh, my friend, come here."
Yep.
Yes.
That's my buddy.
Yeah.
He's gonna make me feel better.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
They don't equate me with work.
No.
They equate me with feeling better.
Feeling better. Yeah. I can see why you enjoy that more than people.
Oh, yeah. It's so cool. It is.
So tell me, we're going to switch gears a little bit. So I read in your bio that you worked on a ranch in Idaho for a while. When did you do that?
You know, I did that mostly in my junior high and high school years, growing up and working for the Manning Ranch there in southern Idaho. You know, just great people. And I learned a lot of horsemanship from my father, but I also learned a lot from the Mannings. They're just top hands and just excellent horsemen. So you know how it goes sometimes. Kids learn only so much from their parents, but if somebody from outside tries to instruct them a little bit, they learn even more. So I guess I was no different. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're a kid. So where is that? Where is that close to in southern Idaho? I was just asking.
So,
where is it close to?
Yeah. Southern Idaho, little town called Oakley. So if you were on the freeway and you passed Burley or Twin Falls in southern Idaho, on the freeway, you go directly south from Burley 20 miles and you run into Oakley. And as the crow flies, you're only 30, 40 miles from the three corners where Utah, Nevada, and Idaho meet.
Okay, because I was just in Wendell, Idaho, so that's sort of
in the
same area.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great.
Absolutely.
Cowboy country. I knew there were cowboys in Idaho, but man, we're talking real deal picturesque cowboys.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
That's true. You know, that is part of that whole Great Basin cowboy experience. You know, a lot of Great Basin buckaroos in that northern Utah, northern Nevada, southern Idaho area. I just didn't know that we were supposed to wear flat hats. That was my fault. Yeah, I never drew that correlation that I was supposed to wear a flat hat. But anyway,
you never got that memo, huh?
I didn't get that memo. Yeah, that's exactly right. So we always wore Northern Range turn up on the side type hats. Yeah, and we didn't realize that being in the Great Basin, they would take your Great Basin Union cowboy card away if you didn't wear a flat hat. Yeah.
You can't be officially a Great Basin cowboy because you didn't wear the right lid, right?
I didn't wear the right lid, but I did wear chinks, so I was in good shape.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
you got part of it, right?
Yeah, I got part of it right.
Good. So is that where your cowboy poetry was born, Andy? What drew you into that?
Absolutely. That's where it was born. And once again, my dad was the one that got me into that. He loved to read cowboy poetry. And he even wrote some cowboy poetry, and he was actually pretty darn good at it. And he was one of those. I've got a poem called Cowboy Poet. And one of the stanzas in there says he would rather write than read. And that's a true statement there for both my dad and I. We'd read the Western Horseman and things like that. But as Dad was reading an article, a story would come to mind, and he would start writing, and he would write in the margins of the Western Horseman, and he would write on the back of an envelope that was sitting on the table, and just started, writing down some of these stories that this reminded him of. So I come by it honestly, this cowboy poetry thing. You know, it's all inspired by my dad.
Oh well, you do some beautiful work. Now, do you do any of your dad's poetry?
You know, I don't. He's got just a couple of them out there, and they've got a little different type of one of his poems talks about his a medical trip he took to the VA hospital. Okay.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You can imagine. Yeah. All right. So you can imagine what is in that poem. And some of my poetry gets a little ribald, and but not like this trip to the VA hospital. But anyway.
Yeah, you can see why. That's for family only, right?
yeah, exactly right. But I do have some of his stories, and I put a book together called Writing with Jim. And in that book, he and I take turns telling stories. I found some of his old writings. Yeah, found some of his old writings. And every other chapter, he tells a story, and then I write the poetry behind it. And then every other chapter, I tell a story, and then I write the poetry behind it. So it's kind of a cool collaboration. Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds great. Well, we're going to do one of your poems now. And this one is cool. It has a twist to it that's really cool. How did you come to write No Man's Land?
This is an interesting story. Big Brother Jim and I were on the freeway heading south out of Cody, Wyoming one day. He was driving, and I was looking out through the high desert there, and I noticed some big washes, some big arroyos. And Jim and I started telling stories about both of us had an experience where we were chasing after a cow or a calf, and we come upon one of those washes. And that's where the genesis of this poem came about.
Well, it's a good one. So let's listen to No Man's Land.
The day thus far was uneventful. Not a thing to make me bitter. All the cattle were behaving except for that one lone bunch quitter. Well, if she breaks and runs again, I'll daub a loop around her neck. I'll jerk her tight and tie her short. Don't care if we have a wreck. Well, I punched a hole in my rope. Ready for the next time she broke, the sun was sinking in front of us. The dust was making me choke. An awful haze hung in the air. And she bolted with a nine in her tail. I snapped right in behind her with a loop that couldn't fail. Both of us running faster than chain lightning with a busted link. I knew the high desert ground well, but it didn't occur to me to think about new hazards that now lay in the brush since the last rain. Cloudbursts had carved new washes and altered the sagebrush terrain. Well, I saw nothing but her head. I'll fix that old hide, by gosh. Then the ground suddenly quit us. Me and Buck headed over a wash. Even as hard as Buck jumped, I knew we couldn't span the gap, so I braced myself for impact, wedged the swells into my lap. We hit halfway up the other side, and that is all that I can remember. When I woke, the sun was gone. It was darker than December. Poor Buck's body lay lifeless by me. But somehow I had escaped injury or pain. I pried the hat from over my brow and stroked Buck's black mane. Now, I wasn't scared, and I wasn't hungry. I wasn't tired nor chilled to the bone. But for the first time in my life, I felt lonesome and all alone. Well, I decided to leave horse and tack and search for a place to bed down. We were miles from the bunkhouse and nowhere near close to town. Then I remembered a sod-roofed hut just over the next sagebrush ridge,
A squatter family lived there now, you know, just across from the Goose Creek Bridge. There was a strange feeling that eve. The air was hanging dense and still. An eerie silence deafened the night as I crested the top of that hill. A light glowed out of the window, and I made my way to the door. I heard voices coming from within and footsteps on the wooden floor. Then a wind gust blasted the shack as I raised my arm to knock, and coyotes howled like banshees. Something spooked the stock. I was crying out to those inside. They acted like they were scared. Well, I didn't mean them any harm, but they just stood there and stared. Now, I'm not one to grow roots when I'm not welcome somewhere. So I'll just head back to my horse, and I'll spend the night there. Well, they were kind of unneighborly, but I imagine it's for the best. Daylight will be breaking soon, and, you know, I don't seem to need the rest. The sun is on its way up now, and I wander back to be with Buck. But as I draw closer to the wreck, I begin to question my luck, for there beneath my loyal pard lay a crumpled, mangled waddy, wherein my clothes and my boots, there lies the remains of my body. It was me that spooked the stock. It was me that scared them folks. Them coyotes were howling at me, egged on by a bodiless poke. Well, now I understand the loneliness. No pain, hunger, chill, or fear. The silence and the darkness, the confusion that I felt here. Well, those feelings have all left me now, and I no longer have the urge to roam. We leave behind our mortal shells, and Buck's spirit takes me home.
Ooh, everybody loves a good cowboy ghost story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a little goosebump action there. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. That's around the campfire story.
Yeah, exactly. And I've used that one around the campfire before.
Bet you have. I bet you have. Well, I want to talk about your big brother, Jim. I love him.
You know, what a great guy he is.
He is. And, you know, he is, in many ways, he seems to be much more quiet and subdued mm-hmm. than you are. But
yeah.
Really, he's more. I mean, he's more.
He's
the zingers, and you never
yep.
know what's going to come out of his mouth. I mean,
you got that right.
It takes you by surprise, but it just makes you laugh all the time.
He is. He's devious. You got to kind of watch him. Yeah. Yes. He's a great guy. He's a little on, you wouldn't think it, but he's a little on the shy side. But every once in a while I get him onto the stage with me and mm-hmm. we have an awful lot of fun that way. But yeah, he's a deep thinker. And if he's not saying anything, you should be scared. You should be very scared.
You don't know what he's fixing to say.
Yep. He is brewing something up and you better keep an eye on him.
One of my favorite stories that Jim told was the llama story, and I have told and retold that because he was talking about how, you know, he's on his ranch and he has his hay fields, and the, we were talking about the moose problems with, you know, coming
yeah.
the elk coming and eating his hay, and just, you know, in conversation, his mother-in-law lives with them, and he said one day she decided to go off to the feedlot to get her a couple of cows. She wanted a couple
yep.
of her own cows. So she yep. came home with a couple of heifers and a llama. And he's
and
like,
a llama.
What?
Yep.
You are that is not living on my ranch. And she's like,
yep.
Well, I didn't mind. They were going to kill it and I couldn't let it go. And he said, and he just hated that llama until one day he looked out and all, he said, all the elk were running off of the hay back into
yep.
the forest. chased yep. by the llama. And then he yeah. looked at me and he goes, I love that llama.
Yeah, and that's a true story. That llama is the best moose deterrent that you could ever imagine.
Oh, my gosh. They're fearsome. They're fearsome creatures.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And everything else is absolutely afraid of them. Moose and horses, yeah, them too.
But I mean, it was like, oh, my God. I just got this visual when he was telling it that was hilarious.
They keep the not welcomed guests out of the haystack.
Yeah, and they're very aggressive. I had no idea how aggressive.
Oh, they are. Yeah. Boy, they lay their ears back and they spit at you and they'll charge you. Oh, man, yeah.
Yep, they're crazy. But anyway, Jim is great, and it's fun. It's fun when you can get him on stage and you tour together because he's wonderful. And I love him, a big brother Jim. And then you two have the radio show, Clear Out West Radio, which is award-winning syndicated Western music radio show and other stuff that you guys talk about. So tell us how Clear Out West came to be.
Oh, man, you know, it's kind of interesting. I started listening to Hugh McLennan's radio show on the internet, you know.
Yeah, 15
years ago. And I just loved listening to Hugh on the internet, you know. And I was just lamenting one day about how we don't have anything like that around here. I got to go to the doggone confuser in order to listen to something I want to listen to. So one day I cornered Big Brother Jim and I said, hey, you know what? I says, go listen to this radio show and tell me what you think of it. Went and he listened. He come back and he said, boy, that thing's awesome. And I looked at him and I says, I think we can do that. And he says, I think you're nuts.
That sounds
like him. Yeah. So we contacted Hugh and we got a lot of mentoring from Hugh, and we even went up there and visited him, and he helped us out, and by golly, we got that thing put together, and we talked our local radio station into being patient with us and airing it while we were still learning. And you know, I go back and I listen to those first few shows that we did, and oh, it was terrible, Belinda. Oh, it was horrible. We were bad. It was just terrible. But we finally polished our art just a little bit, and we got about 30 radio stations that carry us now, and we're on the internet, and it gives Jim and I the opportunity to get together every Tuesday night and laugh and have a good time. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't see a whole lot of each other.
Oh, yeah, because you're busy lives. I understand that. I still live a mile from my sister, and I would go 2-3 months without seeing her because of my touring schedule when we lived a mile apart when I was home. But, oh, my God, it's such a fun radio show and such a fun thing for you guys to do together. I love that.
Oh, it is. And we actually look forward to it every Tuesday night. And we just have a ball getting that thing recorded. And we have to edit.
you don't just put it out there live like we do.
We can't. We absolutely can't, because we have to go back and record over some things that we shouldn't say on the air. So there you go.
Thank God for Edna.
Yeah, exactly. We have actually thought about putting out a bloopers CD. That thing would sell like hotcakes.
I would buy one. I guess you don't have to really do that on this show because it is, you know, a gospel-y kind of show. So people are, I think, they mind their manners a little bit more.
Right,
maybe.
Although
I don't know, Jim, you just don't know with Jim. If I had him on, you just don't know.
I have heard him in church talking from the pulpit, and some things have come out that I didn't expect. So, yeah, we got to be careful.
Careful with Jim.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? Speaking of family, I would love to hear for you to tell us a little bit about your beautiful wife, Jacqueline, and your kids.
Oh my.
You have a great family.
best thing that ever happened to me. Absolute wonderful gifts. My beautiful bride, Jacqueline, of almost 28 years now. Yeah.
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have four awesome kids. I don't know how we got the best kids ever sent down from heaven, but we did. yeah. Sadie is our oldest, then Dylan, Will, and Abby. Abby just graduated from high school, so Jacqueline and I are looking forward to trying this empty nest thing.
Yeah, that's a whole different world after you've spent decades of your life.
Yeah.
into your children. It's kind of, I mean, it's cool once you can switch gears, but I found the transition a little bit difficult because I was really into being a mom, and you guys are really into being parents. So I can imagine it's kind of that gear shift is a little difficult sometimes.
It is. It's going to be a little tough, and it's going to be more tough on Jacqueline. I can guarantee that. But you know what? I'm going to chase her around the coffee table a few times, and I'll bet we'll get back into practice.
You'll get back into practice. You know,
yeah.
You guys did a lot with your kids, like with rodeoing, and I mean, you guys are really into the horses
and
all of that.
My goodness. So and all sorts of high school athletics. And, you know, my butt has been in a bleacher for how many years now? Yeah. A lot of years. Yeah. So, but it's sure been great, and we've sure enjoyed it. And we have our very first brand new grandbaby. How about that?
Congratulations. Now the fun really
starts. Oh, exactly.
Better.
Yep, exactly right. You know, Yvonne Hollenbeck, great cowboy, cowgirl poet there from Clearfield, South Dakota, she told me, she says, you have never really experienced love until you hold a grandchild. And now I understand what she means.
It is different, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh my goodness sakes. What a pure and sweet little spirit that has been sent down and trusted to our kids, from God. Just what a gift.
Yes. And you know, and the thing that I really love about being a grandparent and I think is one of the reasons that you can just like open up and just flood them with your love. Not that parents don't do that, but parents have that dual responsibility of, you know, loving and cherishing and pouring that into their child, but also disciplining and molding and they have that, you know, that trying to find that fine balance between that all the time. As grandparents, you do this. You could just open the floodgates and let the kids take care of the disciplining and the shaping. You're just going to spoil them and love them. And so it's just,
that's it, exactly. You know, my job as a grandpa is to help them get into mischief that they have not thought of yet.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's my job, you know. Sugar them up, shake them up, and send them home.
I'm so sorry, Sadie.
Yep.
Oh,
exactly.
So
right. I saw a t-shirt. Saw a t-shirt the other day that just made me laugh, though. It said kids these days are the reason kids these days are spoiled and they become spoiled brats is because most often somebody's afraid to spank grandma.
Oh. Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's funny.
It is funny. We're going to do another one of your poems now, and this is a cool one. I can really relate to, and this has to have come from experiencing watching your children with their horses, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly where it came from, and in particular, you remember us talking about somebody else teaching your children and they learning a little bit better. I actually got to that point too, where there's an old cowboy here lives close to me, and he has forgotten more about horses than I'll ever know. So I enlisted his help, and I had him come over and help instruct my children. And so this is, this is through the experience I had with my children and horses, but also through the experience I had with this old cowboy teaching my children.
Oh, it's a wonderful poem, and it's called By Giving Me Horses.
What is it about little girls and horses? Little boys interact differently with horses than little girls. Little boys want to get on a horse. They want to turn it on. They want to drive it around like a piece of haying equipment, show you what they can make it do, then bring it back, throw it in park, turn it off, get off, and walk away. But little girls, what do? They love on it, and they hug it, and they kiss it, and they squeeze it, and they brush it, and they curry it, and they comb it, and they braid its mane and tail, and feed it carrots and apples and horse candy. When I leave this life, I want to come back as one of my daughter's horses. What a life that would be! And I have decided that every horse deserves, at least once in its life, to be loved by a little girl. You taught me to give by giving me horses, and sent me adrift on uncharted courses. You taught me to love by loving them truly, not just the tame, but the wild and unruly. And when one was given to the neighborhood boy, you taught me instead the true meaning of joy. You taught me to work by working beside me, training our horses with you there to guide me. You taught me to serve by serving together, no matter the time, no matter the weather. And when one grew old and crippled with blindness, you laid him to rest and taught me about kindness. You taught me respect by respecting each steed and treating them gently, no matter the breed. You asked much, for you knew their ability, asked forgiveness, and taught me humility. And when one was ill in some sort of fashion, you aided him right and taught me compassion. You taught me to trust by trusting their actions and not taking heed to outside distractions. You taught me to share and to give of yourself and not put your talents away on a shelf. And when a few coyotes ran one through the fence, you taught me that actions come with consequence. You taught me gratitude and of thanksgiving, that horses, not things, make my life worth living. And when one was stricken, I learned of remorse. You taught me your best when you gave me a horse.
Oh, Andy, that is just a great poem. I just love it.
Oh. Thank you. Aww. You know, it's just true. You know, you learn so much from God's creations, don't you?
Yes, you do. When you take the time to listen and
there
and
you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah, that's right.
It's that giving still that the Lord admonishes us to do. I think that's probably one of the most challenging things as people that. For me, anyway, I'm kind of like a little busy bee, and so it's hard to be still.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing to do is just shut up and listen, isn't it?
It is. Thank goodness somehow we manage.
Yep, exactly right, B.
Oh, gosh. So tell us, Andy, what do you have on the horizon? What good stuff is coming your way?
Oh, man, lots of great things. Next week, I'm headed up to Winston, Oregon to Riverbend Live. I've got a couple of performances over the Wind River Mountains in Dubois the following couple of weeks. Down to Kanab, Utah. You've been there. And
yep.
Enjoyed that down there. So, yeah, I get to go back down there. And, you know, good buddy and friend Bren Hill and I have been doing a lot of performing together, Belinda. And it's
that's
been a
awesome.
Hoot.
It is a hoot. Yep. You guys are great together. So anybody that's anywhere close to you guys, if you've not seen Andy and Bren together. I got to get Bren on the show too, by the way.
Yes, you do.
Anyway, yeah, they are great together. It's awesome. That's wonderful. Well, for now, people can find out about all of this stuff on your website.
Yes, they can.
Yeah,
got a got a website, cowpokepoet.com. You can go there. You can also go to our radio show website, listening to our radio show on the internet, if you're so inclined, clearoutwest.com.
Great. So you can, so Cowpoke, what was it again? Cowpoke?
Cowpokepoet.com.
Cowpokepoet.com, and then your clearoutwest.com, right?
Clearoutwest.com, right. Yep.
Yep. And go and check Andy out. And if you need a good MC for anything, if you want a good poet to bring in for some event, you just can't go wrong with Andy. He will take everybody, keep them laughing, and then hit them with one of these beautiful serious poems to kind of change it up. And you're just, he's a wonderful entertainer and just heck of a nice guy. And thank you so much for being on the show, Andy. It's just been such a pleasure.
Oh my goodness, Belinda, I wouldn't have missed it for the world. You are truly a blessing in my life. Sure do love you, sister.
Oh, I love you too. And I remember, I will never forget after when my late husband passed away in 2008, Andy was one of the first people to get in touch with me. The dust settled. That's when it got the hardest. People who've lost a spouse know that, you know, everything's all over with and now it's time for everybody to get back to their life, back to normal. That's when it really hits you and the really loneliness sets in and you're just like, everybody's gone now. You're not surrounded in this cocoon of love, you know, that happens right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And Andy took it upon, he called me just about every day. And he said, what do you need, sis? And I'm going to call you and check on you. And I said, just make me laugh, Andy. Just, I need to laugh. And you would call me and call me and call me until I said, okay, I think I'm good now, Andy. Thank you. And then we still get in touch, but not, you know, every day. But you were,
I know
you were,
it. Yeah.
You were,
well,
that was
thank
so
you.
Wonderful. I appreciated that so much about you. Thank you, Andy. And before we let you go, to set up this last poem we're going to do from you called Christmas Each Day.
Yeah. You know, I get to thinking about that every year when we celebrate the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. And what a wonderful feeling it is in that special season, the Christmas carols, the trees, the gifts, everything like that. And it strikes me hard every year that I need to be living this way every day, 365, not just during the Christmas season.
Amen to that, brother. Well, we're just so delighted to have you on the show, and what a perfect way to close out this segment. We're going to listen to Andy's poem, Christmas Each Day. Bless you, brother.
I can still recall and remember them all, childhood Christmases years ago, with all the noise of brand new toys and everything dusted in snow. The tree you could smell was decorated well with ornaments that were homemade, and gazing up when I was a pup, wondering if Santa was delayed. But all the gifts, sleighs and snow drifts and memories of St. Nicholas nights, all fail to compare with the love that I share for my mother's special picture of Christ. Other pictures we had, but we were all glad when this one struck that special chord, 'cause it was a sign of that special time we celebrated the birth of our Lord. It was kind of small, not big at all, and wasn't the best in show. On it was a light. You could see it at night give the room a special glow. It wasn't very flashy, not very classy, but sat there the same every year, a reminder of his birth, as he came here to earth to free us from bondage and fear. Then stories we'd sew of the days long ago of how wise men followed a star. To a stable he lay, on a bed made of hay, in a land so distant and far. I'd then be good, as a young boy should, remembering what was taught me, and would never regret, but somehow forget, the toys my parents had bought me. So tell me why it is always that I wait until Christmas to remember this life that was given, my reason for living, yet I only recall it in December. So now I resolve this problem to solve and promise to work every way to remember His love, a gift from above, and live like it's Christmas each day.
Oh, I just love Andy. It occurred to me that we didn't share any of his funny poems. You really need to check out his poetry if you love to laugh. He has some great funny poems. And it has been so much fun sharing him with all of you today and actually getting to know him a little better myself. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of the qualities that is most impressive and endearing about Andy for me is his precious servant heart. And though some, like Andy, seem to be blessed with an abundance of that beautiful quality, we must not forget that we are all called, even mandated, to strive to develop that in our own lives. In Philippians 2, 3 through 5, we are instructed, "Nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus." Wow, that's a big calling on our lives. And, you know, when I was reading about some of these scriptures and looking these scriptures up, I ran across some scripture when the disciples had become indignant over two brothers who were asking to sit at Jesus' right and left side in heaven. Jesus responded to his disciples by saying in Matthew 20:25-28, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Now, it's our basic human nature to look after ourselves, but the Lord sent us a precious gift, a helper, to teach and empower us, each of us, to also have a servant heart. As he was instructing his disciples, this tells us in John 14:25-26, "These things I have spoken to you while I am still with you, but the helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all that I have said to you." We each have been given gifts, talents, and capabilities with a very specific purpose in mind, to serve one another. And it cannot be more simply stated than it is in 1 Peter 4:10. "As each of us received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace." Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest and my dear friend, Andy Nelson, for sharing his heart with us today and his laughter and his humor and all of his stories. And always, always a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all of the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. You can even download our nifty mobile app and take us on the go with you. So if you like our shows, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today. And until next week, may all your trails be blessed.
Splendor of heaven, knowing his destiny was the love.
There's no fear.